This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Doxcast, and this one is going to be very magical. So I am loaded up with guests today. Matt Cerrone, how are you?
Hello.
Kyle Rehom.
Hey.
And Caleb Larson, you do need to work on that. I thought you were underselling how bad it was, but so we're going to get this show on the road really quickly today. We are here to do the full Return to Dominaria spoiler show that we do. It's our regular 3-month Paradox Magic podcast right now. So I have 2 minutes for intro and banter. How's everybody doing?
I'm pumped for Dominaria, so let's just
get through this
so we can get closer to the pre-release.
I'll just say this. When we first saw Dominaria on announcement day, like way back last June or whatever,
This
was the set that, despite all the other cool stuff that was out there, like this is the set that everyone targeted as if we're going to see a turnaround in all things Magic, or not even a turnaround, like it's not like it's bad. I mean, if we're going to see that next surge, you know, like this is where it's going to come from. And I mean, all signs are that's just absolutely spot on so far. So how about Open House yesterday?
Yeah, no, Open House is just our event where we open our doors, invite new people to come and play Magic, have all of our veterans come in to help them learn. I mean, we ran out of product. Like, we have intro decks to give out, promos. Land of War Elves was the promo, so that's coming back in Dominaria. Everyone is excited about that. I mean, we had our rooms were packed. We ran out of chairs. We ran out of product, everything. So it was amazing to see everyone showing up for that, and that's definitely a good sign for this set going forward.
Yeah, as somebody who's done this for 25 years, there are several points in time I can remember when there are good, you know, big changes in attendance and surges and all that. And I mean, you're really getting that sense of what Dominaria is doing, which is nostalgia. And we'll talk about that heavily here. So
absolutely,
let's dive right into the story of return. Why have we returned to Dominaria?
Oh, yes, yes. So our current story has been following the Gatewatch. They fought with Bolas, and we got to follow Jace on his adventures to try to get his memories back on Ixalan. So now we're catching up with the other half of the Gatewatch, which is Gideon, Chandra, Nyssa, and Liliana. They go to what was supposed to be their rally point on Dominaria to wait for Jace. Nyssa realizes that this is not working out, and she kind of just bolts and ditches the Gatewatch right away. Chandra then says, well, maybe I need to go find myself as well. And she takes off, but doesn't officially quit. Nyssa, you know, turned in her badge and everything, broke her oath to the Gatewatch. But Chandra's like, well, let me go figure some stuff up. I'll be back in a few minutes. Leaving Gideon and Liliana on Dominaria. We find out that Liliana has some ulterior motives for being on Dominaria. She's going after the last demon that has her life contract or whatever it is. If she defeats this demon, she should be free from her curse based from the Chain Veil. So that's her goal. Along the way, she runs into her old bro, Josu. She ends up killing him, which is kind of sad, but he was a zombie, so he probably deserved it. And then finally ends up killing the final demon. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. It starts with a B. But then, surprise, surprise, it wasn't really the demons who had the contract with Liliana. It was our good friend Nicol Bolas. So now Liliana is serving under Nicol Bolas to who knows what nefarious means, and the rest of the Gatewatch is kind of in shambles. And yeah, so Dominaria is not that great as far as the Gatewatch is concerned.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. No. Caleb, are you a story follower?
You can't take me off this podcast ever, because I would never hear any of this if I wasn't listening here and soak it up, and I follow each time. Mm-hmm. No, I never know the story ever. Not does not intrigue me.
And it's well, that was killed the mood.
This is spectacular.
Magic, though, right? Is that there's different shows for different folks? Like,
yeah.
You don't have to like the story to love the game. So, but Kyle does a good job telling the story. Mm-hmm. So.
This is spectacular. This is all like wandering towards a Planeswalker war. I can't wait.
Yes, so exactly.
I've been waiting for this for like 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I've wondered when they would just go all in and have the set with the Planeswalker war. And
which plane is getting utterly destroyed.
We do have a couple other cool story things happening on Dominaria. It's not just about the Gatewatch showing up. So it turns out some of the original members of the Weatherlight or the previous members... Previous people on Dominaria are still around and kicking. Joyra has been on a little project to actually find the Weatherlight and where it crashed and resurrect it, and she assembles a whole new crew to start flying that around. Karn is still there doing Karny things. We'll talk about him a little bit later. And then we also get a snapshot of Teferi, who sounds like he's going to actually join up with the Gatewatch and kind of, I don't know, fill in for Nissa since she ditched out, or just help him figure out, you know, what their next game plan is. So,
and this is dumb from reading some of the flavor. This is the most flavor I've ever read. I mean, it sounded like there's a lot of attempt to explain where all the different even tribes and stuff come from that are on Dominaria. And maybe that was already done. I have no idea. But yeah, it gave me personally a sense of the world in a way that I didn't necessarily have before.
Well,
so
yeah, Dominaria has been the melding pot. I mean, it was the home of magic for the first 10 years. So they kind of just threw everything in there. And now they're, you know, circling back, bringing it, mixing it all together.
But yeah, I like that. I like that sense of like bringing story to it somehow, instead of obviously, yeah. When they made Alpha, they thought it was a one-time game that you would be done with. So,
well, the only opportunity they had back on the plane was during Time Spiral, and it's such a short-lived adventure. I doubt that they spent too much time thinking about fleshing out storylines. They probably had this one that they had a bunch of time to be able to work on art and writing and story for.
Well, the first thing we always do when we're reviewing a set is take a look at what everybody wants to hear about, which are Planeswalkers. So, speaking of Karn, Matt, we have a Karn.
Karn, I would like to go on record. This is one of my five legends. Like for the
spoilers,
Karn, Mr. Assign of Urza, four colorless. Which is only our third colorless walker, I believe, ever.
Other Karn
and Ugin. So still slightly groundbreaking in that front. Five loyalty, plus one to reveal top two cards of your library. Opponent chooses one of them. You put that one in your hand, and the other one gets exiled with silver counters on it. Minus one to take a card with a silver counter on it from exile and put it in your hand. And minus two to make a colorless construct equal to power and top. It gets plus one for each artifact you control.
Why do you think this would go?
Well, it's a low casting cost colorless planeswalker, which is something they absolutely have never done before. The cheapest one before this one was 7 mana, so there is all kinds of strange potential with a card of this low of a casting cost. They can just slot into anything.
Mm-hmm. Comes in at 5 loyalty.
Yeah, you can go up to 6 right away.
That's crazy.
And draw you a card,
Does drawing a card, I mean, he doesn't inherently protect himself, right? But
he can minus two to make a dude that might.
Three loyalty, yeah. Still fine.
Yeah.
Sure.
It is strange because two of the pieces, like one piece cannot be used at all without the part. You have to plus one before you can ever minus one. And the minus two has nothing to do with the other two, kind of, which is kind of interesting. So it basically has three abilities. And one of them doesn't even have anything to do with the other two, so it can kind of fit into an even wider array of decks than normally would have happened with a walker like this.
Caleb, thoughts on this guy?
This is a hard to evaluate card. I don't know if it's going to be great, crazy good, or just unplayable. I mean, it is 4 mana, at least draw you a card, right? That is the minimum. Like it might
and save you
card,
6 damage.
Yeah, and save you some damage, but it could just be really good, just like card filtering, because you know you plus and it's the top two cards, and then I say, well, you can't have this one, take that one. Next turn you get the one you want.
Yep.
And so if it just sits there, it's a good
and still make them choose again, you know. Yeah, so I mean, it's a weird card. It's like they have to kill it because it'll eat them alive, even if its abilities are mainly just sort of utility in a way.
Yep.
You know, I think those first two abilities are really good.
Yeah.
And a card like this, power caliber level, probably come down to the relative speed they choose for the format, which there's a lot of powerful things going on in Dominaria for sure. Once rotation happens, we have just the tribe stuff going on the Ixalan with nothing to do with Dominaria at all. If the things slow down, a thing like this gets much more powerful.
Yeah.
Kyle, sure. Thoughts?
I mean, I'm scared. Colorless planeswalkers are scary because they go in any deck you want. Yep. And another cool thing to note is that it's you get a card back with any silver counter, so this guy's actually sweet in multiples because once the first one dies, you play the second one, and any of those cards that were getting exiled from the previous ones, you can start picking those up as well. So,
sure.
Yeah, I think this, I mean, it's probably the premier card of the set, and it's going to be the one that people are trying to play with the most to start off with.
Yep. I mean, sometimes that happens a lot, and then that card doesn't turn out to be the big hit, and something that is under the radar does. But, I mean, I don't know. Four colorless with that plus one.
It's awful cheap. This guy seems
pretty good. So. Caleb, next up is our second Planeswalker is Teferi. All
right.
Hit me.
Hero of Dominaria. Did I say Dominaria? What do you guys say?
Dominaria.
Dominaria.
I've always said Dominaria. Which may not be right.
I was just in Vegas, so I was looking at the Aria last night. I didn't go in it, but, you know.
Sure. Three generic blue-white for a four loyalty Planeswalker. Plus one to draw a card at the beginning of the next end step. Untap two lands. Minus three to put target non-land permanent into its owner's library. Third from the top. And a minus eight, you get an emblem with whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent and opponent controls. I really like this card.
The card drawing wasn't good enough. Why don't you just exile a card along with it?
This is the one that I want to try.
Yeah.
I've heard people want to try it modern and in control shells. I'm excited to see how good it is.
Yeah, the plus one is so sweet because it like does protect itself because I mean you're drawing a card and now you've got lands open to kill whatever they're trying to do or counter whatever they're trying to do. Heaven forbid your lands tap for more than one mana somehow. I do really like this card a lot. Teferi's always been a sweet character too, so I love seeing him back, and having him be the hero is always cool.
You know, the control element of this card is insane, right? Yes. Like, it's like, draw a card, and then the one consequence of playing a cool thing in the control deck is your mana's tapped.
Right.
And, yep, that plus one does both of those things. Yeah. Like, that ability is really good, I think. So... Matt, thoughts on Teferi?
They're finally wising up a little bit. They're finally like realizing that things untapping lands immediately is maybe not the best idea in the world. So you wait until end step to untap, but you still have some protection on it. And, I mean, putting something through from the top in some formats is an eternity. So, for half the time, it might as well just be gone. I'm so sad that they didn't just let it say any permanent so you could maybe landlock somebody given enough time.
So. This Teferi's pretty obvious, right? Like, it's just a powerful card.
It's fun. Yep. It's sweet. Great to see Teferi back. He's still got his beat stick with him.
And how about a red Planeswalker? Because, I mean, red is the color that's probably had the least successful Planeswalkers, really.
Yeah, I mean, Chandra Torture Defiance has been terrorizing Standard for a while and has seen play in Modern and Legacy. So
yep.
I think they finally hit it well with that, but... they're always so hard to evaluate. So
And you can tell over the years that they've really struggled to find the right spot for one, given the range that they've had of double red to six casting cost to, and just lots of stuff that doesn't really work. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Jaya Ballard, though.
This is a familiar face. We had Jaya Task Mage way back in the day, and she's still around on Dominaria. So Jaya Ballard is 2RRR. For a 5 loyalty Planeswalker. Her plus 1 ability gives you 3 red mana, but you can only spend it to cast instants or sorcery spells. A plus 1, the other one, is to discard up to 3 cards, then draw that many cards. And finally, her minus 8 is you get an emblem with you may cast instant and sorcery cards from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into a graveyard, exile it instead. This one's really hard to evaluate. Typical of red Planeswalkers. The plus one does kind of protect itself because in theory you add 3 red mana and then you kill something with it, as red likes to do. Filtering with the other plus one is also great. I mean, if you draw those extra lands.
And 3 is a lot.
Yeah, three cards is a lot.
I was really surprised it wasn't 2 and 2, which was, so.
Is it Duretti that lets us discard?
I think that was only 2 though with him.
Red is traditionally, as far as I know, it's been dig 2. So that's a lot. That's the one that kind of intrigues me.
Yes,
like
sure.
the triple red. But again, you know, like the triple red, it's not unlike what they're trying to do with Teferi, where, like, again, you tap out for your big thing, and then that's the consequences are my mana is tapped or whatever. And I mean, this isn't untapping your mana. But yeah, there's a spell there to be cast, you know. So I don't know, like, does it, but it's got to fit into, well, actually, both those things fit into like the highest end of some kind of burn deck. But like, those are always supposed to have two or three mana curves or whatever. So then it's five mana. So I don't know. Matt, what do you think?
Well, a couple things. Like, looking up and down, like, most of the spoiler lists, which if someone takes some time to do, there's a lot of double and triple mana cost requirements and a lot of stuff, which will tend to just mean that that's their attempts many times to make people have to dedicate more to certain colors and or to slow down a format some. So it's possible the triple red it exists there partially to do just that. Yeah, it's a tough walk to value. Poor red. I mean, I'm not a big fan of red in general in Magic the Gathering, but red always gets like screwed over like pretty badly when it comes to planeswalkers because it's the aggressive color. It has been since the beginning of time. It will be until the end of the game probably, and they just can't design a red walker that is too efficient, or it just breaks everything in half.
Well, yeah. I mean, last things, Caleb. Like, it's cool that you get a dark ritual, you know, red ritual. But you're forced to, you know, just cast a spell with it. Like, what situation are you going to be in? I mean, I guess kill a creature is right.
I think that's the bummer of this card because you can see this being useful in like prison decks in other formats, if you will. Like, look at the, you know, mono red stompy decks, right? They play Chandra and they use a +2 for mana a lot, but they're looking to cast Chalice or Snaring Bridge, some prison element, right?
Yeah.
Very rarely looking to cast an instant and sorcery spell, so I think that really holds this card back, actually. Yeah. I think that makes that
yeah, I mean, a red sweeper of some sort, you know, X damage to each creature is probably your best bet, but yeah, it is a little prohibitive. It probably isn't necessary for it to only be that, but maybe it is.
I mean, I think the key to this is the other +1, like, is whether that is a enough to play in something. But even then, what are you doing with that? You know, like, you can't just pay 5 to have a permanent that only does that, and then
I'm glad it's not creatures, because imagine Chandra into Jaya into ++ Glorybringer.
Yeah, that's fair.
A little interesting, like, historic tip for anybody that doesn't know too. Like, many people believe that very likely the original Jaya is where they got the idea for planeswalkers from, and so it's cool to see a Jaya planeswalker like be introduced on Dominaria. So that's really cool.
All right, so the big new card type in here is Sagas. I'm sure a lot of people have seen them, so we'll go over a couple and talk about what they are. I don't know, Kyle, explain what a Saga is and give us an example.
So this is a new card type. Well, it's an enchantment, but with a subtype Saga. So this is kind of their big reveal for the set on what they're changing or something they're trying new. We've got a whole new card frame for these. And so what Sagas are is they're an enchantment that when they come into play, and then at the beginning of your turn after your draw step, you add a lore counter, and each saga has 3 chapters. So you start on chapter 1, the next turn you go to chapter 2, chapter 3 is the turn after that, and then the saga goes away. So they're all designed to tell a story, and they're all super cool and interesting, full of flavor on what they're doing. So I'll give an example here. The one I'm going to look at is the Eldest Reborn. So this is actually telling the story of when Nicol Bolas died and was then resurrected way back in Legends. He was killed by one of the Umazawas way back in the day. Cool stuff going on there. So the saga comes in. Chapter 1 happens right away. Each opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker. Pretty sweet. Oh, this is 5 mana, by the way. B and 4 generic. Chapter 2 happens the next turn. Each opponent discards a card. Not bad. Chapter 3 is then put target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. So you get 2 cards out of them, a creature or planeswalker, and then a card out of their hand, and then you get to resurrect anything, whether it's a creature, planeswalker, your graveyard, their graveyard, anything like that. I love the value in this card. I think this is probably one of my favorite sagas in the set.
Yeah, I think that card's really good, right? And then, so, I mean, here's the thing. Like, look at the saga. So for a couple of sets or I don't know how long, right, they've tried to put story cards into the sets. And it's a good idea that hasn't really hit, right? So these things are they're perfect for Dominaria because we're going to have this historic viewpoint of all of Magic the Gathering. So not only are these just a card with these abilities, it's the fact that they're a specific storyline from the past of Magic the Gathering, the Brothers War.
They're stories that people know, and so you can fill in the holes or find the information. It's not just like, hey, look at this one card that has one ability and, you know, you need to make up the rest. Like, everyone knows these, or there are people out there that know these stories and so can really tell beyond what's on the card.
Yep, and Caleb, you're our constructed guy. Well, so is Kyle Pro, but, like, I mean, you can't really enchantment removal is going to be the least removal of any of the removals, right? So, I mean, you play one of these, you're probably getting the three effects, unless they become so good that you have to, you know, do a lot of sideboarding. But, I mean, what do you think of these cards?
The way I've heard them talked about is almost like a nerfed Planeswalker, right? So you think about Planeswalker, you play it, it has an effect when it comes in, when you activate it, and then for the next couple of turns it has an effect, and they either deal with it or let it happen, right? It's like that, where it comes in, it has its effect, but you don't really get to choose the effect. And then it happens, but you don't get to choose that, and then it dies. And so that's kind of a way I've been looking at them. They're super hard, because, like, someone mentioned on the Facebook group, there's this Fall of Thrand. It's a 6/5 generic, 1 white saga that, you know, the first floor counter says destroy all lands. Okay? Second one and third one says each player returns 2 land cards from their graveyard to the battlefield. And so, you know, I don't know the story or anything, but That's fine, what it's doing, but what happens when you flicker it? What happens when you know, things like that?
When it gets destroyed before you get to chapter 2.
Yeah. Right,
you know?
Right. So things like that, I'm not really sure how this works out in a constructed environment. You know, there's a couple of aggressive ones, there's a couple of control-y ones. I'm not really sure how they're going to play out. So I'm viewing them as nerf planeswalkers until I see them in play.
Matt, I mean, one thing about these is one of the measures of whether a card is good or bad is does it do something when you cast it? And these all do something when you cast them, right? So,
yeah,
and I know you're not as big a fan of these, but give us the, you know, what's your take on these things?
They did a pretty smart move, like, in the design space of these, like, when they were creating them, because they made sure that when they're entering the battlefield, they're going to do something immediately. So there's no getting completely screwed for your amount of mana that you're paying up front, which you're paying, like, respectable amount for, and they all act as, like, basically effectively like time release capsules, right? I mean, so if you're a smart player and you understand what you're doing, you try to set yourself up for the appropriate sets of turns, and if it's done correctly, you probably do extremely powerful thing with sets of these. Even the Armageddon one is talking about blow up all lands for 6. What happens if you exile, like, you're like the graveyards right after that? They're not prepared for recovering from that. So you can even set yourself up for the fact that you have time spaces in between them going off to do some even more degenerate things with them.
Yeah, Kyle, I mean, what do you think of?
As far as playability, I think they're going to be good. I mean, they are. It's always a delayed effect or something that has a continuous effect is always undervalued at first, just because you don't realize that, like, on that second turn when you're, you know, having your opponent discard a card, you also have all your mana open and are getting to do other things on top of that, you know, attacking with creatures, whatever. So I'm a big fan of them. I love the stories that they're telling. There's some really cool ones out there as well. So
I read them all on the plane today, and I had read a few, and I got to say I really like them. I mean, I agree that I think playability feels to me all over the map. I was thinking, I wonder if they originally maybe cost 1 colorless less and then didn't put a lore counter on the turn they came into play, you know? And that was the thing they really had to balance around with was, but I think it's the right decision that they get a lore counter when you play them. These had to have an effect. You couldn't sit there for the turn duration before they got their first effect.
Nope, for sure.
Perfect example of a setup one too. Like one of the blue ones called Mirari's Conjecture, which is like the 3 lores is to return, to get an instant back from a graveyard, followed by sorcery, followed by being able to copy like anything for an entire turn.
Yep.
I mean, you're talking about setting yourself up for exactly whatever super disgusting thing you want to do later.
Yep. All right. Speaking of history, our next new, I don't want to say mechanic.
Theme is
cards with the word, historic cards. Matt, what are historic cards?
Store cards, like they put the term like onto a number of different types of effects, but effectively a store card is an artifact, a legendary creature, or a saga. Those are
anything.
Like, those are quote unquote historic spells. And so all kinds of cards reference them in different ways. Like, for like a simple example, like Board the Weatherlight's a 2-mana sorcery in white that just says, look at the top 5 cards of your library, and you can reveal a historic card from among them, put in your hand. So it's I guess it's mostly a keyword, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a theme. It's a mechanic. It's just putting the emphasis on these card types that we've already had, other than sagas. Those are new. But, it's a really simple thing to do. Just, like, let's shift the emphasis onto artifacts and legendary things so that we can get extra bonus for those types of things. You know, it's almost like a tribe. Like, my tribe is now artifacts and legendaries, which you can do whatever you want with. I like it. It's a really elegant design. I like how they just kind of put the emphasis on that for this set.
We did get a Mox in this set that deals with historic.
It is a historic spell because it's an artifact.
And last mechanic to really talk about is, let's just keep this short because we're a little behind schedule, but Caleb Kicker is back. And, I mean, who doesn't like Kicker?
Kicker is before my time. I do play a Kicker card in Legacy. Bind of the Vastwood has Kicker on it.
Yep.
But the idea of Kicker is that it is an additional cost that you can cast the spell for. So I don't actually have Kicker card pulled up. But
sure. You can grab mine.
Example. Sure. Kyle picked out one that's called Fight with Fire. It's 2 red for a sorcery. It's red. It says Fight with Fire deals 5 damage to target creature. Or you can choose to pay 9 mana for it, an additional 6. And if it was kicked, it deals 10 damage, divided as you choose among any number of targets instead. So it's not like you cast it and you go, does this resolve? And then you kick it. It's just you're choosing to cast it for 3 and deal 5 damage, or choosing to cast it for 9.
Yeah, early in the game it does one thing, later in the game it does a lot more. You know, it just really nicely helps with mana.
You know? Yep, absolutely. So, they give you alternatives, give you something to do at all stages of the game. Yep. Kicker's great. Everyone loves
it. Yeah, Kicker's terrific. And I'm sorry, I completely left out. We're going to talk about legendary sorceries as well. They don't need a ton of explanation, but we can use an example.
Yeah, it's just another emphasis on legendary stuff. So legendary sorceries, there's one in each color, and then they believe there's one multicolor one. It's just a new card type, but the restriction is that you can only cast a legendary sorcery if you control a legendary creature or planeswalker. So my favorite one from this set is called Yawgmoth's Vile Offering.
Yeah.
This is a black one, for 4 generic and a black. And this one says, put up to 1 target creature or planeswalker card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control, destroy up to 1 target creature or planeswalker, and then exile the spell. I think this card is powerful. It's really hard to evaluate how easy you're going to be able to have a legendary creature or planeswalker, because those are generally things that people don't want you to have on the battlefield to begin with. My favorite thing about this card is just the art and the lore behind it. For those of you that followed back in the invasion block, this card art depicts Gerard delivering the head of Urza to Yawgmoth in order to resurrect Hannah. If you know all those characters, you know how awesome this is. It's really sweet to see.
Yeah, I mean, this card's spectacular and limited.
Basically, all the legendary sorceries are spectacular. They tried to make them at least remotely playable. They've also there's a number of legends at Uncommon in the set, which I believe only one ever time before they really did it with, way back in original Kamigawa era. So definitely a lot of emphasis on playing with historic stuff and legendary stuff, like, in general in the set.
I think it's a lesson they learned starting with, like, Rise of Eldrazi, where if you're going to have a theme, then the theme's got to go out, be playable. It's got to go through the rarity levels so that people can get copies of those cards and play with them.
It is notable that it's creature or planeswalker, though. It's not land or artifact.
It does make it much more challenging. Because, if all you had to do was have, like, a legendary land out, I think these cards would be insane, because that's not that difficult of a restriction.
No, and then that would make the Mox actually really good as well. Hit a turn 1 legendary land, play the Mox, and off and running.
Yep.
So
I'm still scared of this pretty good, but we'll see.
All right, it's quick hits time. It's our favorite time of the show.
So I think we should do our super awesome top five that we've got planned.
Cool, right, let's do it. So we get it done. Yeah. You want to start with Matt and go around?
Sure. To give everyone listening, since there's so many legendary creatures and legendary cards in this set, me, Matt, and Caleb all went through and picked out our top five favorite legendaries in Dominaria. I couldn't rank mine in order, so I just have like a five, but we're just going to go through them real quick. We'll just read the cards, probably not do much discussion about them, but Matt...
There's probably going to be some overlap. I'm willing to bet on this.
I was getting drunk in Vegas.
So I'll generically...
Do you want to do one at a time or five?
No, let's hear all five of Matt.
Okay, geez. Okay.
Matt, you're up.
All right. Well, first one was Karn, so that's really gotten taken care of. My second one is... a finder here. Lyra Dawnbringer, which is Baneslayer Angels as a low. It is not exactly Baneslayer Angel, but very much like Baneslayer. I mean, flying, first strike, lifelink, 5/5 for 5 mana out of white that anthems all angels, and they have lifelink as well. Seems pretty gross. All right.
And the rest
of mine are all black because I really think black is completely off the rails in this set, so I'm excited about a whole bunch of black cards. One of them is Demon Lord, and I don't want to just try to pronounce this either, but I'm going with Belzenlok is how I'm saying that. Black 4 for 6/6 Flying Trampler that effectively, like, you, whenever it's a battlefield, exile cards from top of your library until you reveal a non-land card. If it is 4 or greater command cost, you do it again. And then you like take a damage for each like card you get to put in your hand.
Oh boy!
So it automatically the minimum draws you a non-land card and is a gigantic demon. Seems okay. And I think Kyle referenced this, like this one a moment earlier. Josu Vest, Lich Knight, which is a 4 mana 4/5 menace creature with a kicker of 6 more mana for a grand total of 10. But when it happens, it makes 8/2/2 Menace Knights for a total of 20 power. So good luck surviving that if that ever happens in a game.
Seems like
a very good reanimator type.
That guy by himself is really good.
That card is really good.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
It's because Menace has just turned out, I mean, it's just so much better than every other variation.
No, it's been amazing. Yeah,
so. And my last one is Lich's Mastery, which is they've played around with like lich style effects here and there in Magic, like, but this time around it's triple black, 3 colorless as a hexproof. You can't lose the game. If you ever gain life, you draw that many cards. Whenever you lose life, you have to exile permanents or cards from hand or cards from your graveyard. And if this thing ever leaves the battlefield, you lose the game. It having hexproof means that no one can kill it very easily ever. And if you have yourself set up for some dimension on gaining life, that's going to keep making sure you have ways to fuel to stop the damage. I mean, it's not to say this thing will do anything, but that's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's a cool card. I don't know for sure. No, I mean I like that card too. It's a good card. So
there's six more that I couldn't get to.
That's a card that I'm excited that they made. I think it's fun to throw cards like that out into the world and then see what happens with them. And because I don't think it's like too powerful at all, right? So, all right, Caleb, you're five apparently.
Good. So I have reasons for mine. I'm gonna give them to you, even though you didn't ask for them. First one, Jorda Archmage. Did I say that word? Eternal?
Yeah, that works.
Yep. I have a commander question.
Sure.
What's the color identity of that card?
5. Okay. All 5 colors.
Sweet. I like this card a lot. I think this card's super cool. This is one of the cards. I don't play commander that often, but this makes me want to play commander. More importantly to me, Cube has no great Jeskai card to me. Mantis Rider is currently the Jeskai card in Cube, and this is discussing it with other people. It's my new Jeskai card in Cube. And I'm very excited about Jorda. Moldratha, the Gravetide, is 3 generic, black, green, blue, I can't read colors, for a 6/6 elemental avatar. During each of your turns, you may play up to 1 permanent card of each permanent type from your graveyard. Another seems to be great commander card. I'm really excited about that one. The one that Kyle...
I like your cards so far all for a format you don't play, but, I mean, you're not wrong.
It's just,
you know,
want to play. I mean, should legendary creatures make you want to play it?
Yes, yeah.
You can also play them
or
in Brawl.
Or play Brawl. Yep.
Nice Brawl as well. Which is similar to Commander. Well, the one that Kyle and I have that overlaps is hilarious to me. We both picked Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive.
You picked it for
Boo.
The wrong reasons.
I picked it for
Boo.
The wrong reasons.
Wrong reasons.
Boo.
What's your reason?
I want to attack with Saperlings.
Okay, I want to attack with Infect Creatures.
One of you read his flavor text.
My ancestor Tashir used to say, life is a series of choices between bad and worse. I'm a master at making great bad choices. Such a good card.
I like it.
Such a good
I like that one.
It says, creatures you control with power or toughness, one or less, cannot be blocked. Most infect creatures have power or toughness, one or less. I don't know if this is actually good or not, but I always look for one card that I could try. So, it's sweet. The next two are wizards. I think wizards look really cool. And the one I'm more excited about is, I have no idea how to say it, is Adeliz, the Cinderwind. Mm-hmm. It's uncommon. I think this is cool, but it's one blue-red for a flying haste 2/2. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, wizards you control get +1/+1 till end of turn. That card seems super cool to me. And another wizard is Naru Miha, Master Wizard. It's 2 blue-blue for a legendary human wizard. It's a 3/3 with flash. When it enters, copy target instant sorcery spell you control, and it anthems all wizards. I just think wizards are going to be cool here, and I'm really excited about it. So, yeah, that's my five.
Isn't, there's a 0/4 one that's like
that copies that
+1 for every island, right? Or +1 power for...
Oh. It's not a legend.
It's not a legend.
It's not a legend. Okay.
It's not bad.
I thought that card was kind of cool. I didn't know that wasn't a legend. Yeah. You know, real quick, we'll get Kyle's five. I'm just going to say, like, I just had this flashback to Kamigawa, right? And so, like, Kamigawa Block was the last, like, well, no, it was, like, the first big legendary set since
I mean, there
Legends.
Was a set called Legends.
Yeah, no, but... I know. But, I mean, it was the first time they dove in, you know, and they, and it's a set that probably, I mean, that might have been the set that taught them the lessons about getting legendaries at every
right.
level, right? But, you know, like, at the time, Kamigawa was a set that actually sort of tanked Magic. It was one of the downturns in Magic times. But then what happened was, and it was even before Commander in and of itself, but like legend cards from Kamigawa Block were like the most sold singles we had. Like if somebody was coming in for singles, they were always coming in looking for cards from Kamigawa. And I mean, I guess maybe it's because less people bought that block or because they had EDH early on or whatever, but you know, this set just there are going to be cards that years from now are out of this set. They're a key to Commander or something. This is a huge set. This is a huge release.
Yeah.
So,
all right. So, my top five. Like Caleb said, we both picked Tetsuko Umezawa. I have much more wholesome reasons. I just want to attack with like a lot of Saprolines and stuff. So, don't worry about that. My next one is Whisper, Blood Lithurgist. He, she, I'm not sure. A little ambiguous, but it's a 3 and a B for a 2/2. You tap it, sack 2 creatures, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. I just think that's super sweet to get lots of value, you know, throwbacks to Recurring Nightmare when you start looping things that make extra tokens or give you some enter the battlefield value. That's really cool. My next one is Joyra, Weatherlight Captain. So Joyra's back. Joyra was my first commander ever, so she definitely has a special place in my heart. This time she actually makes a little bit of sense as an artificer and not some weird suspending time mage. But she's 2 blue-red for a 3/3, and it's very simple. Whenever you cast a historic spell, draw a card. So that's every artifact you cast, every legendary, and every saga. Mm-hmm. There's so many sweet artifacts that you can cast. Artifacts are really easy to make cheaper as well. So I'm excited to definitely build a Brawl deck around Joyra, possibly try to play her in Standard. My fourth card was Oath of Teferi. So this is a legendary enchantment. It's the Oath cycle since Teferi's joining the Gatewatch. This is what he's contributing. For 3 white and blue, when Oath of Teferi enters the battlefield, exile another target permanent you control. Return it to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. And then, the sweet one, you may activate the loyalty ability of planeswalkers you control twice each turn rather than once. So it just breaks the fundamental rules of planeswalkers, which is scary and awesome all at the same time. Just instantly going through, trying to figure out what planeswalkers can I like tick up an ultimate right away, or which ones can I like double tick down. You know, do you want to play Nicol Bolas and play all your Dark Intimations and see how big, how high you can get Nicol Bolas the turn that you play him. So I'm just really excited about what this card can do.
I'm going with Classic Garrick.
Yeah, exactly. Gonna... Tick him up, untap two overrun, lands, overrun right away.
Do you want to just cast two cards with Karn? Two cards with Karn every turn?
Yeah, you know, whatever. And then my last one is Slimefoot the Stowaway. So this is another one of our uncommon legendaries. One black and green. He is a 2/3 fungus. He says, whenever a sapperling you control dies, he deals one damage to each opponent, and you gain one life. And then you can pay 4 mana to create a 1/1 green sapling creature token. Built-in value engine all by himself, and I love creatures that just let you dump any amount of mana you have into them to get some value. So excited to see. I think this card is super good, too. Like, a 2/3 for 3 mana has been playable, and the fact that he can just grind out games by himself, I can definitely see him seeing some play in Standard. So there you go. Those are my top 5. But yes, I definitely had a list of probably 13 to 15, and it was really hard to get down to 5.
I should have made my list. There are going to be, like, if you're a collector or you're a value person, there will be some cards out of this thing that will just shift so much in value over some amount of time. Because, like, we're going to launch with what everybody thinks, then they're going to play with them. But, like, 2 to 5 years from now, there might be, like, 2 key legends that pop out of this thing because of where the game goes.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, Dominaria, again, is just going to be this, like, this feels like, yeah, hey guys, come buy this set from Paradox. Pre-order is still available. But yeah, you know, no, I mean, it's a self-plug there, but I mean, it's, I don't know, man. Like, this set is huge, right?
No, so, it's super exciting. There's a lot of sweet stuff to look at.
They really missed that on Expedition Caracas.
There's no...
That's true.
Yeah. There's a lot of good cards here, and then we're going to do quick hits, but there's a lot of good cards here. There isn't necessarily... 3 cards that, you know, like, oh my god, that's a Vendilion Click, you know, or something like that.
That's,
you know,
but, that's a good thing, though.
Right, no, I know, but it feels like the power level's pushed to a pretty good point, and without a Jace the Mind Sculptor, you know, but who knows, so.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I mean, again, I'm the guy who sold Brian Hellebang years ago when Tarmogoyf came out. Tarmogoyf was selling for like $1.50. And we had a foil one in our binder from opening. And Brian's big move was to sell it to Craig Spitzer for $3.
Yeah.
He's like, he thought he was really pushing it on. Yep. So so who knows? Let's do quick hits for the rest of the show. Matt, a favorite card of yours that might still also happen to be legendary.
I attempt to fuse some nostalgia stuff with cards like simultaneously sometimes. They did throwback to Black Knight, White Knight, called Knight of Grace and Knight of Malice. Let's see if we can find one of them really quick. And I was trying really hard to figure out the banners on these two. It's the two banners on Order of Lightbearer and Order of the Ebon Hand, which I still didn't figure out for sure. But they're both like first strikers for 2 mana. They have hexproof from black and hexproof from white, which is groundbreaking. They haven't done that before. Kind of cool. So they're experimenting and stuff like that. And if anyone has a permanent of the opposite type, black for the white one, white for the black one, it also gets +1/+0.
Caleb?
Good Kyle.
Oh, okay.
I know we were doing more.
All right. I will talk about another exciting saga that I really liked called the Antiquities War, which is, again, another sweet flavor thing, story from way back in the day. So this saga is blue. It costs 3 generic and a blue. Chapters 1 and 2 are the same. You look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom. Chapter 3 is where the action happens. Artifacts you control become artifact creatures with base power and toughness 5/5 until end of turn. So, you know, you get 2 artifacts from this card in and of itself. You're probably playing some other artifacts when you show up with an army of, you know, 4 to 8 5/5s. That's pretty good. So I'm really excited to try this card. It also goes great with Joyra, which I'm excited about as well. So, yeah, that's one of my quick hits.
We have a comment on Facebook to talk about Yargle.
I was going to tell Caleb that.
All over the internet.
Yeah.
Yargle is everywhere.
We'll give him a quick mention. So Yargle is one of the legendary creatures. He is a 5 mana black creature, 4 and a B. He is a 9/3 frog spirit. Full stop.
9/3.
Just, 9/3. You know. We've never had a 9/3 creature before, so this is our first 9/3 ever in Magic. He's got a little bit of a story to him. His flavor text tells about how he was a frog that ate a bad maggot and then slowly transformed into a demon frog spirit. So, you know, check that out. But, yeah, Yargle's pretty sweet. He's a fan favorite for sure.
I guess, but...
Well, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Expensive.
Yeah.
He's only an uncommon, so he should be around.
There are two exciting
goblins. You just block him and he's dead.
Got spoiled. Yeah. And I'm going to butcher this, but I think Goblin Warchief is one that was not previously in Modern. Is
PTSD. Getting PTSD already. No, I don't. It's, you have no idea if you never had to play Goblin Wars.
So I know Legacy Goblins is insane, and I don't believe Goblin Warchief or Skirk Prospector are the two that have been reprinted into the Modern format and Standard too.
Yeah,
And those are exciting if you're into that.
So you got Goblin Chain Leader, right?
Siege Gang Commander.
Siege Gang Commander's back as well.
It's scary. It hurts my soul. Like, there was so much, like, those three cards were together all at the same time in Onslaught era, and they wrecked and demolished for 2 years. And so all three of those cards, we'll see if Modern Day Magic, if they hold up or not, but that's still pretty scary.
I mean, the new guy in this set, there's a cycle of creatures that are all three of the color that they are, single color. And so Goblin Chain Leader, which somebody could read, seems really good.
Yeah, I don't have him.
One sec. Yeah, it's Goblin Chain Warlord. He's triple red, 3/3, first striker. Layers a battlefield, deals 1 damage to each opponent, and 1 damage to all their planeswalkers, and I think creatures.
Yeah, he's a weenie sweeper, and he's a 3/3 first striker for 3. You know, the guy seems just a very solid body. And that 0/4 wizard I mentioned is in this cycle, too, because it's triple. It's a djinn, yeah. So it's triple blue, 0/4. For every island you control, he gets +1/+0. So it just seems like a cool effect. There's some other really cool. You know, there's a couple of really cool big green, just mono green beasts in here as well.
Oh, yeah.
Matt, do you have a card? Sorry.
If you're touching on the beasts, I'll hit them both really quick, I guess, at once. One of them is the triple green cycle, 5/4 for triple green.
Yeah.
Can't be blocked by power two or less creatures.
Okay.
Got Land War Elf in the same set sitting right beside him. You got a 5/4 possibly on turn two. That's pretty scary.
And how much further can you push the 4/5/5/4 body for cost and ability in green? I mean, that's got to be about
this one's
limit,
pretty,
right?
Like, the biggest thing has always been, oh, you get a 5/4. Well, they just chump block it.
Yep.
No, they're not chump blocking it. I guess if they want to chump block it with a 3/3, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, in a set like this, at least it should be big enough to trade for something that matters then.
Oh, for sure.
It has to, or like Matt said, it could be out on turn two.
Does die to Glorybringer, though. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Doomblade, too.
All right, was there one more?
A lot of the cards that they're evolving, like from previous versions themselves to better versions themselves.
Yep.
So, like, there's one called Untamed Kavu. That's 2 mana. It's a green and 1 colorless for 2/2 Vigilance Trampler, which already, by itself, is plenty good, and has a kicker with 3 colors to give itself 3 more +1 counters, which I believe is a throwback to its original version in Invasion
Kavu
era. Kavu Titan.
Yeah.
Which was pushed beyond belief back then, and this thing's literally just
Vigilance and, so.
The one other big green creature I gotta talk about is our shout out to Harambe. We've got Grun, the Lonely King. He's a 5/5 for 6 mana, 4GG. Legendary creature, Ape Warrior. Kicker 3. If he's kicked, he comes in with an additional 5 +1/+1 counters. And whenever he attacks alone, you double his power and toughness until end of turn. So he could be a 10/10 that attacks by himself as a 20/20.
Yeah, that's a riot 20/20.
That's an uncommon.
That is also an uncommon.
That's pretty
common. So I don't know how this set's going to play out. It's an uncommon.
They did do a relatively conservative job with the vast majority of cards on set when they're coming to Kicker. They played Kicker 2 times before. A lot of the Kicker costs in this particular set are pretty high costed to make sure that
or the base
not
card is
likely
super high.
To break the back of Limited.
Yeah, that or the base cost is really high and then like, oh, pay an extra couple mana to get the Kicker, but you're already shoving out 8 up front or something like that.
I don't think anyone's kicking Vest for 10.
Right? Yeah. The worst thing that would happen in this format is for it to devolve into like really fast aggro where you just wouldn't get to play all this cool stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? So I'm sure that they know that and hopefully are working hard. Who's got a card?
I can lay one on you. Let's talk about Tashar, Ancestor's Apostle. This is a white creature, 3 mana and white. For a legendary creature, Bird Cleric. It's a 2/2. It's got flying because it's a bird. And whenever you cast a historic spell, you return target creature card with converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So just a ton of value in a good evasive body. if this thing stays on the battlefield for a couple of turns, you're probably running away with the game because you're just getting back all your little weenies and pounders and things like that. So I like this card a lot.
Sun Titan Valiant.
Yes, a little Sun Titan throwback, little bird throwback, because that's a thing.
Caleb, you pull any cool cards yet out of the list?
I think that one pulled up right there. No. Gilded Lotus? I don't
know. Seems okay. Yeah.
Is that cool? Is that cool, good. In standard? I actually don't know. I didn't play it back then. But I know it's cool in every other format. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's a great commander card, obviously. Yeah, no, it needed a reprint because it was up to like $20. So this is great.
Gilded Lotus is a good card.
Well, Gilded Lotus. There's in standard?
Yes.
With all this really high. If the format slows down, almost certainly.
Gilded Lotus is always deceptively good. Like, you don't think that it's good, and then the turn that you untap with one, you're like, holy crap, why haven't I been playing this card my entire life?
Sure.
Do not underestimate the power of Gilded
Lotus. I mean, I guess the only thing, like Matt's right, if it slows down and you're trying to cast all these expensive things, of course you are. And maybe if there's something else that mechanically works to get
it's
it out
historic.
Faster or, yeah, no, it's... It is. It was a good way for them to. Yes. They weren't going to put Black Lotus in the set, and they. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they spent a lot of time trying to make some sort of like a new Lotus,
right.
You know, and
yeah.
then just couldn't, and then just made and thought, all right. So, Matt got another card.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about two removal spells really fast. I continue to be super excited about Black format. There's like Black feels really good at first glance. One's cast down. Won't be particularly amazing like in this exact limit format. It's Black 1, destroy a non-legendary creature. It's basically a better Doomblade for the vast majority of formats. That is, that's about as good a removal spell as you're likely ever going to see for that mana cost.
The card is dangerous. If in this format, it's one thing, but in a traditional game of Magic: The Gathering, pretty good.
Yes, absolutely.
The other one I think is just an uncommon as well. Black 2. It's called Sell the Score. Exile creature, put two loyalty counters on Planeswalker control. That is one heck of a tempo bump at the same time on the same turn from something. Like that's got to be right on the fringe of like. Being really disgusting depending on how fast the format comes around.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, Exile is super relevant right now. There are good Planeswalkers if you're, you know, that's a Vraska ultimate on the turn after it comes into play, or, you know, Chandra can get up there with that as well. So, I'm excited to see if that one makes it. I think Sorcery is obviously the only knock against it, but it's still probably good enough.
Yeah, but like in, I always refer to Rise of Eldrazi, you know, we had a double black, 3 casting cost card that killed a creature and put tokens into play, and that was totally playable.
All right,
what do you got?
So we got another sweet throwback card. Squee is back, everyone's favorite goblin. He is now Squee the Immortal. So he's 1 red, 2/1 goblin legendary creature. You may cast Squee the Immortal from your graveyard or from exile. So he's not coming back to your hand every turn, but if you want to, you know, sacrifice him repeatedly, do what you wish with him, he'll keep coming back because he still loves you.
Thinking outside the box a little bit, like, equipment is not exactly spectacular these days in Magic anymore. They've pretty much nerfed it in the ground. They refuse to make a good one, but there's one called Forbearer's Blade. That's 3 cast, like, to cast, 3 to equip. Gets +3/+0, Vigilance and Trample. Not too bad of things on a blade, but if you can ever get it attached to something even once, the rest of it is that whenever the equipped creature dies, you just auto-attach it to another creature. So if you can get the chain rolling even one time, that's one heck of a beat stick.
That's not bad. It's not... No, that's pretty good, actually. Oh, what do you got?
Caleb's got a modern card to talk about here.
Go, Caleb.
This is it. We talked about Greg last time we talked, because it was all the Merfolk in the format, so we're talking about Greg again. This is Merfolk Trickster, 2 blue, 2/2 Merfolk Wizard with Flash. When it enters the battlefield, tap target creature and opponent controls. It loses all abilities until end of turn. So you can throw away all of your Harbingers of the Tide. Never going to play them again.
Mm-hmm.
This is just better than most likely Harbinger of the Tide. Just, it's so good. You don't got to pay 4 to flash it in. You don't have to violate it in. You just 2 mana. When it enters, tap down. The tempo is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, it's very good. It's a
good
card.
I think I like this card because the 2 abilities, when you think about it, like, well, if I'm tapping the creature, why do I care if it has abilities or not? Or if I'm making it lose the abilities, like, why is it attacking? But it works so well because it does 2 different things, and it's not just linear. It's only good when they're trying to attack you. So yeah, this card is sweet. It's a wizard, which is relevant for this set. We've got a lot of cards that care about wizards. It's a merfolk, which is relevant for Ixalan, which we just got off of. I like merfolk trickster a lot.
Very good.
We're going to have about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to do the housekeeping, and then we'll do a couple more rounds of this. So we are releasing this podcast on Monday morning, the 16th of April, so hopefully you paid your taxes. That is relevant because that weekend is the pre-release for Return to Dominaria. If you have not registered yet, we still have plenty of slots available. We have lots of pre-release slots. They bump numbers on that really good. I don't know. We are probably close to out of pre-orders for the
really close. Two-thirds of the way through our pre-order boxes.
You might be able to still squeeze in and get a and you can pre-order more than 60 boxes, but that's how many come with the exclusive buy a box card that is not available in the booster packs. And then we've got all kinds of stuff brewing for release weekend, from drafts all day on Saturday the 28th. I expect a big F&M that week, and we are working on a midnight event as well.
Event is posted if you want to come and play at 12:01 a.m. It's just a one round event. Draft, play one round, everyone gets a pack, and we're giving away some extra swag on top of that. So check that out.
I think that's a really good variant. I still like the draft play round. We haven't got it to totally work, but I think at midnight, I really like it.
Yeah, I mean, you'll be out of there by 2 a.m., so you can still go to work the next day if you really want to.
Or just come back to Docks at 10 and start buying cards again. Matt, cards, go.
Sylvan Awakening. Natural Affinity says a natural something. It's a throwback to another card that basically does the same thing. It's like green 2 colorless, turns all your lands into 2/2s that are also reach indestructible and haste. They're still lands, and it's until your next turn. So relevant still during your opponent's turn. The last time we had this was Rude Awakening back in, I think, Mirrodin era, and it was a kill condition. It worked. It was scary.
Yeah, it's a good card.
So that's very possibly something that might happen as an endgame card.
Guys,
we got a couple of cool reprints. Opt is back. We just had that in Ixalan, but it's back again. Syncopate's also back, which is sweet. That's always a really good counter spell. It exiles, which is great for, you know, Scarab God and whatnot right now. Let's see. What else we got out here?
We have Wizard Lightning Bolt and the Wizard Counterspell, right?
Yeah, that's true.
The Wizard Bolt is really good. Both are really good. Yeah.
So it's a 3-mana Lightning Bolt, but if you control a wizard, it's just a Lightning Bolt. Same thing, 3-mana Counterspell, but if you have a wizard, it's Counterspell.
Maybe I'm dumb, but I feel like wizards are the ones who got all this cool stuff in this set, or am I just missing another type that
I mean, wizards are definitely the heavy focus. It's hard to say if there's like quite enough to make it a thing, but they have a lot of really cool tools.
Do you think that's because
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Do you think that's because back at the beginning of the game, like, blue was so dominant that, like, is that what they're doing with that, or why did they pick wizards?
I'm sure
it's callbacks.
Wizards
was one of the primary tribes alongside merfolk in original classic Magic the Gathering.
Matt, card.
Karn's Temporal Sundering. One cute thing about this thing, it's a legendary sorcery time walk. That also lets you bounce a non-land permanent, like when you cast it. The interesting thing about this is, I believe it is the first time they have made a non-mythic time walk since they started making mythics.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's slightly interesting to see that they're starting to explore possible different design space with that.
And the fact that you could bounce something, you just end the game with this card in a lot of situations.
Right, exactly.
So.
Like, yeah, you're getting two attack phases and taking out their best
their
defender.
Thing that was stopping your attack. Yep.
So it's very good.
Yes. What do you got?
I'm going to talk about the Phyrexian Scriptures. So this was one of the very first sagas we saw, and it got the gears turning for everybody. This one actually depicts the art of the Dark Ritual that was printed back in Mercadian Masks, I believe. It's kind of a zoomed up of the Phyrexian Altar. Really sweet throwback. It's also a good card. 2BB for a saga. Chapter 1 lets you put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target creature. That creature becomes an artifact in addition to its other types. Chapter 2, you destroy all non-artifact creatures. And then Chapter 3, exile all cards from all opponents' graveyards. So you get a delayed damnation where you're getting to keep at least one of your creatures, and then you make sure that nothing's going to come back because all the graveyards are gone, or their graveyard's gone.
Thing seems really busted.
It's definitely good. There's that one turn window where they get to see it coming, but I think it's still strong enough to where it probably won't matter.
So we just have a couple minutes left. Let's get some final thoughts on this set. My sense is this is one of the most packed sets we've almost ever seen, and it feels like there's just like swaths of cards that in and of themselves would have been the cards supporting a different set, and yet they're all smashed together in this set. Is that fair, or what do you think of this thing, Matt?
There's a lot of things going on in this set, for sure, which is a good thing, for sure. Like, I enjoy seeing them try different things. And for purposes of Limited, which I always enjoy, they didn't hold your hand in a bunch of different archetypes of this, too. It's very open. So you're just going to do the things you'd like to do. Like, and that is really nice breath of fresh air after you just played a fully tribal-related set where you feel like you have no choice but to be going the good direction that your card said you should go. So looking forward to it for sure.
Caleb, what do you think?
I'm excited. There's a lot of stuff going on. It feels like it's just a jumble of legendaries. There's a cool limited implications, right? Like, how many can you draft before it's dangerous?
Right,
it's a legendary. Like, there's a lot of stuff to think about, and it seems, like what Matt said, do what you want to do, and it seems like fun. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this set. I mean, if you can't find like a pet card or something that you know, hits you in the nostalgia button or whatever you want to call it, then you might just not be playing Magic correctly, because there's just so much cool stuff going on. There's lots of powerful cards. I'm really excited to see what this looks like. Pre-release is going to be super awesome. One thing we didn't mention with pre-release on this one that they're doing a little bit different. In your pre-release kit, not only do you get the random rare or mythic foil, you also get an additional random legendary foil. So you're getting two promos in your pre-release kits, Yargle, which I'm super excited about. You could get a date-stamped Yargle. Odds are there for you. So lots of cool stuff happening.
All right, everybody. If you're watching this, you know the drill. You know when everything is. You know how to get pre-registered. You know how to pre-order. Pre-registration for that pre-release still goes through Thursday. I think we have the highest amount of kits we've ever had, but, you know, I would not be surprised. I think this is just going to be a blockbuster pre-release.
Yeah, I mean, big pre-release was Rise of the Eldrazi. We hit, like, over 125. We were just playing on the floor, and we want to see that again, because that's when Magic's really fun, everyone's coming together and doesn't care how they're playing.
Yeah, I feel like all the numbers are going to push. There's so many people show. You can't have, you know, open house to normally draw 8 or 12, and it drew like three times that many people. Yeah. I mean, that just like, look, you know, like, hello, we want to come play this thing. So, all right, everybody, hopefully we'll see you in the next couple of weeks, and enjoy this set for what it is. So,
all right, goodbye.
See you around.
This was the DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time.